Success Mat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Peter King will jump on board with us today, the Monday morning quarterback. Peter King, now that the combine is over, what did Peter hear? And we'll talk to Peter. Remember Ryan Lindley? Eric, you remember Ryan Lindley? It wasn't that long ago. The last time we saw Ryan Lindley, he was being thrown to the turf in Carolina as a member of the Arizona Cardinals. What's really interesting, and Peter has the story I want to get further from him, is Ryan Lindley is now squarely in the crosshairs involved with this NFL draft with the number one quarterback prospect. Ryan Lindley is Carson Wentz's quarterback coach. And he's trying to still get a job in the NFL. So Ryan Lindley has been tutoring the number one quarterback. I don't know if you should be concerned about that. It's really fascinating to me when I saw this. And the great Ted Tolner, who worked with quarterbacks in the past, his son Ryan is the agent on this one. So I'm looking at this story saying Ryan Lindley is tutoring Carson Wentz, and teams are thinking of Cleveland's thinking of Carson Wentz with the number two overall pick in the draft. So I want to get to Peter's view on that. And also, at the combine, did he find time to catch up with Bruce Arians and Steve Keim and the Cardinals or not? Because he's running around there in the meat market, and what the top of the draft looks like. And I also think it's time to get the latest from Peter on Peyton Manning, because we're sitting here on the 1st of March now, and Peyton Manning still hasn't retired. Now, he has until a week from tomorrow. A week from tomorrow is the start of the new NFL calendar. It's when teams can start making moves. You're going to be a flurry of NFL moves next week. You can do franchise tagging and all that today. That's the deadline. But the bigger story is next Wednesday when the league calendar flips over. And by then, is Peyton Manning still a member of the Broncos? What happens to Brock Osweiler, the former Sun Devil? And we'll try to squeeze all that in with Peter King. That comes up in a few minutes. I'm doing something different with Derek Hall today. The team president of the Diamondbacks will be with us. Look, I've interviewed Derek lots of times, and there's lots of topics around the Diamondbacks that I could ask, but I actually sent out notes to, that's probably, I don't know, over a dozen, probably just around 20 people. 20 people that I know that are really engaged and involved with the Diamondbacks in various, forms. Could be people that are season ticket holders, mini season ticket holders, passionate baseball fans that never go. And I just said, is there anything you want me to ask Derek? Because sometimes I can sit in this chair. Lots of guys sit in these chairs and they got all the answers, but it's just their answers. It's not what are people out there really wanting to know that may be below the surface. And some of the things that were texted back to me, I hadn't thought about the netting, but if you sit in the lower bowl at the ballpark, are they going to expand the netting if you're sitting down there? I hadn't thought of that. Wi-Fi, dogs being brought to the parks, Goldschmidt's contract, when are you going to address it? Do you have room for payroll? Most of them were on the same line of the same forms of questions. Not all of them. And of course, I want to ask him about what's going on with the ballpark, and because that's been bubbling below the surface that the team is looking to get out, and that the studies have come back showing it's entirely too much money for them to stay at Chase Field. Or is that their way of saying, well, look, it's going to cost us so much, we need to get out of here. And oh, by the way, who's going to pay for it? So there's a lot with Derek I want to get to, and that'll be coming up here in about 10:35. The story of the day, unfortunately, I have two stories that are on the police blotter. I don't like doing police blotter stories every day because, look, people make mistakes. Unfortunately, the two names I'm going to mention to you, when I put this show together, I didn't think I'd be using Jalen Strong and Brian Merritt in the same sentence, but I am. And if you don't know who Brian Merritt is, you should, because he holds the key to potentially the biggest recruit that Arizona State has ever landed, and I mean even bigger than James Harden. By the way, the other night I'm watching the Oscars, and James Harden is pushing a cell phone product during the Oscars. Like, I never saw that coming. But Brian Merritt and Jalen Strong are on the police blotter today, and it's very disappointing. Jalen Strong was arrested in Scottsdale. Was in the same vehicle as Demarius Randle, and he had in his possession marijuana. You can have your stance on marijuana all you want. The bottom line is he was popped. Brian Merritt was arrested on suspicion of DUI. Now, Brian Mayer, it's any assistant coach, it's not that big of a deal. But if you are plugged into Arizona State basketball, if you want to know why Bobby Hurley has put together a staff that is now in on national recruits, it starts with Brian Merritt. Brian Merritt is the key to seven-footer Thon Maker. If you don't know who Thon Maker is, you better look closely at the national rankings and even on our site, put up another story about Thon yesterday. Seven-footer, viewed as the next Kevin Garnett, they always view them that way, is going to visit Kansas this weekend. Brian Merritt is very close to his guardian. Brian Merritt worked with John Lucas, who's the personal trainer for Thon Maker. There's a reason why Arizona State is viewed as the number one team to get Thon Maker. He's either going to come to ASU or go to the NBA from everybody I've talked to, and he's going to be here 1 year, and that's it. And this story is going to pop in about the next month. So today, when I see that Brian Merritt arrested on suspicion of DUI, that's not good. Jalen Strong is a little different. You know, Jalen Strong fell in the NFL draft, and everybody wondered what was going on with Jalen Strong. And I like Jalen Strong a great deal. And you may just brush it off to the side and say, well, it's just a little marijuana cigarette. You know, when you're in a spot like Jalen Strong is, where you fell in the draft and you just didn't fall, you plummeted. And you have a very limited shelf life in the NFL, which every player does. The average NFL career is just over 2 years. It's not like everybody's Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and sticks around forever. You just have a few years to go make some big money. And if you don't make the big money and if you don't stay out of trouble and you're bumped out of the league, what are you left to do? And it's a real problem, I think, systemically, that these NFL kids come in out of college and they think that the gravy train is here and they're going to get their third and fourth and fifth contracts. And that never happens. They get one or two if they're lucky, and then they're gone. The workforce changes every year. So here's Jalen Strong, who was viewed as a first-round pick. He gets taken, what was it, third round by the Texans in his offseason. And this would speak to Demarius Randle as well. Demarius Randle was released at the scene. Nothing happened to him. He had a terrific season for the Packers. Wrong place, wrong time, wrong people in his vehicle. I don't know. But the police report is out there, and his name is associated with it. It was Jalen Strong who had the possession of the marijuana in Scottsdale. So if you're an ASU fan, you can't excuse this stuff away. If you're a fan, and I like Jalen Strong, I hope it comes through for him. The kid has been through hell and back to get to the NFL. Tough spot in Philadelphia, went out to a JUCO, came here, tore it up. Draft stock goes down for whatever reason. People didn't get into it. And now you look at it and say, this isn't good. This is not smart. Peter King here in about 6 minutes. Other than that, it's the Robert Sarver letter resonated with people yesterday. Even this morning, I was still getting texts and emails about the tone of the letter. If you missed it, it's up on our website, sports360az.com. And that the owner, I had a couple people that whose opinions I really trust that are plugged in within the community that pointed out to me, this may be the front end of Robert circling his wagons a little bit. That the embarrassment that the organization has become, even if you're making money and you're some of the other investors within the Suns, are they looking at Robert a little bit like what happened with Jerry Colangelo, with Jeff Morad pushing him out the door, and Ken Kendrick took over from there? Would the same sort of thing happen? That letter also said to me, Robert saying, I'm not selling, so don't even bring it up. And I think when people bring it up, it just kind of shows you're not dealing with reality. You may want him to sell. He's not going to sell. It's kind of like you don't want Trump, but you look at Trump right now, and he's just crushing it. No matter how you don't like it, he's killing it. You can be upset all you want. I'm not going to say where I'm at on that one. It's you know, I'm doing my sports thing. If I drift over that way, you'll figure it out. But you can get all bent out of shape. But the bottom line is he's killing it. He's crushing it. And Sarver's the same sort of way. He's making money hand over fist, and his team stinks. But I thought that letter yesterday was him saying, and I had somebody that pointed out to me, they said, go pull up a letter that Lon Babbie sent out about 2 years ago. It's pretty much written the same way with the same verbiage, the same language. Timing was about the same. I don't know that. I didn't do it. But it's someone who's very tied in with the organization. I think that the tough part for me is that if the ownership group, and I'm talking about Sam Garvin and names you don't know, okay, other owners that are part of, because it's not just Robert. It's not that Robert owns the whole thing by himself. There's a group of guys in Tucson. Even Robert Sarver's dad, I think, is still involved in the ownership to a certain percentage. Are they getting tired, frustrated with Robert Sarver? And was yesterday his way of firing off, hey, look, I'm the guy that's in control. I've got the situation figured out. We're going to be just fine. Or is the embarrassment that's going on with the franchise really taking hold and some of the other owners are starting to hear it from their friends, their family, or their kids hearing it at school, all that stuff? Is that going on? And from my understanding, there is some of that, but no, I don't think there's enough yet to make a change. The Suns play tonight. If they win tonight, that's their problem. They should lose and lose and lose and lose big, but I'm rooting for Charlotte tonight. They have Miami tomorrow night, which will be, No, it's Thursday night. They have Miami and then Orlando. And when they play Miami and everybody nationally is tweeting and writing about, look at all the former Suns, because Amari's down there now, Joe Johnson's down there now, Goran's there, of course, all of them tied together this week. So it's going to be a busy Suns news week. And the Diamondbacks, they start spring training. They actually have a game with the U of A today. Is Pedro's kid going to pitch in that game, do you think, Eric? Have you heard anything on that? That'd be kind of fun.
No, I never thought of that. That's interesting. He might.
It'd be kind of fun if they threw Pedro's kid out there, Rigo.
And it's not a game. It's an exhibition. Let's not mislead our audience.
But still, if he plunks Paul Goldschmidt, I think it'd be kind of funny.
And then Pedro goes in the locker room after the game.
Absolutely. In the clubhouse
and says, so about that 3-2 fastball under your chin.
Yeah, no, the one where he hit you in the small of the back.
Rio only throws like 80 miles an hour anyway. He's more of a foolum than a...
So it hit and just kind of fall?
Kind of.
Is that it?
Kind of.
It wouldn't even be... It'd just be kind of like, what, are you a gnat? Get away from me.
Let's hope Pedro isn't listening to this.
Well, Pedro's our friend. He's fine. He's coming on again with us every week, right?
Yeah, tomorrow. First show.
First weekly segment
tomorrow, yeah.
Oh, I'll get prepared for it, I guess.
I got approval from the higher-ups, so we're going to go with it.
Wow, that's good. I wish they'd give me approval. Peter King is next, SI.com senior NFL writer. Hey, tonight we have not one but two shows on Fox Sports Arizona. We have Brad Sussmat Football AZ, and we have our debut of the Brad Sussmat Baseball AZ show. And the Baseball AZ show also airs on 6 Fox regionals around the country. Appreciate Fox Sports looking at us, saying this is really cool content. Back with Peter King next. Peter King is with us now, the MMQB, MMQBSI.com, all things around the combine. Carson, we're going to talk about Carson, but not Carson Palmer. We're going to talk about Carson Wentz and Peyton Manning. Let's start there, Peter, at the top of the draft. You just came back from the combine. For the audience out there, what's it look like from your view? I know that the draft is not something you look closely at during the college season. Now that you've immersed yourself in the combine, what's it look like to you at the top of the draft?
Well, just to give you one little quick thing about what the combine is like for me. So most often, Brad, I use the combine to try to work to get time with one or two of the top prospects for a couple of reasons. One, I feel like maybe I'll cover them for a few years, and two, I think a lot of people basically now want to try to get to know these top prospects, who they are as people, so they've maybe seen them on TV. So Carson Wentz was particularly interesting because probably, I'd say 95% of the football fans in America have never seen him throw a football. They have no idea who he is. They know his name, but they have no idea who he is. So he became my, he was my great white whale at this combine. You know, I had to try to get him. I got him for, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 minutes right before he got on the shuttle at their hotel after throwing on Saturday afternoon. So, learned quite a bit about him, but the most amazing thing was that, they keep letter grades in school in Bismarck, North Dakota, starting in fourth grade. So for the last 8 years of, school, ending a senior year in high school, and then for 4.5 years at North Dakota State, every course he ever took, he got an A. Mm. And that seems fairly impossible, but That's what he said happened. But anyway, so he's just, he's a very earnest guy, with a very good arm. Is he going to be good enough? I mean, to me, I think one of the questions that the Cleveland Browns, the Dallas Cowboys, San Francisco 49ers, the Houston Texans, the Los Angeles Rams, all have to ask themselves, it's not necessarily about the level of competition, because Ryan Lindley, the former Cardinal, who was his tutor, interestingly, I mean, Ryan Lindley's still trying to get a job in the NFL, but he spent the last 6 or 8 weeks teaching Goff and Wentz out in Irvine, California. But Ryan Lindley made this point. He goes, you know, I looked at a bunch of their games. I've watched a lot of their tape. He goes, his level of competition really was just about the same as mine in the Mountain West Conference. Mm. So, he said, I don't think that's going to be the big deal. And to me, something that Lindley worked on him very closely was driving the ball downfield instead of, you know, lofting a lot of his throws. He wants to see him, you know, sort of have a little bit better fastball on some of his downfield throws. But he's obviously going to be a very interesting story.
Do NFL people tell you that he reminds them of somebody? If so, who? I hate that game, but fans love it.
I've not asked that question at all. If you were to ask me who he reminds me of, he does remind me a little bit of Joe Flacco.
Okay.
Not just because Flacco played at Delaware and this guy played at North Dakota State, and so the level was fairly similar, but mostly because of the kind of person, the kind of mentality. I told him a story the other day. I said, you know, you kind of remind me a little bit of Flacco. And I said, I'll tell you a story. Joe Flacco's first training camp, 2008 with the Ravens. I went on one of the first few days of camp and watched practice. And there was Flacco at the line of scrimmage looking across at all of these famous guys on the other side, led obviously by Ray Lewis, running around trying to intimidate him. Lewis is barking stuff out. And I swear, it looked to me like Flacco was standing there just saying, okay, are you done? And then he took the snap and completed a pass against this great defense. And my point was, I said, you kind of remind me of that. Like, okay, it's just football. And that's what, and that is what he said to me on Saturday. It's just football. The last thing I'm going to do is be intimidated by it.
Peter King with us, the MMQB, mmqb.si.com. The draft as it sits today, Peter, with the combine behind us, Tennessee, Cleveland, San Diego, do you have a feel about the top three and how it may fall today here in March?
Well, you know, I spent about an hour Sunday morning with John Robinson, who's got control of this draft. For the second year in a row, there's a fairly unknown general manager who's got the first pick of the draft, and everybody said, well, what's last year, what are the tendency? What do you think Jason Light's going to do, Winston or Mariota? And this year, everybody says, what's John Robinson going to do? Is he going to go with Laramie Tunsil and solidify his offensive line? Is he going to try to maybe reach a little bit and get that rusher that they need and Joey Bosa? What's he going to do? And so I get a sense that, I mean, first of all, what he is trying to do more than anything else is he's trying to get people interested in that first pick. He really wants people out there to really sort of, what's the right word, to wonder what he's going to do, so that they'll, if somebody desperately wants Bosa, if the Chargers, let's say, who want a pass rusher, clearly want Bosa, that they'd have to move up. And if somebody wants a quarterback, they'll have to jump to number one because they don't know what Cleveland's going to do. My gut feeling is Cleveland will end up taking Wentz, and that Tunsil goes one, and that three, you know, the Chargers would take Bosa. But again, there's whatever, 8 or 9 weeks before the draft, and we're all just guessing now anyway.
Right, right, right. In terms of the Cardinals, so Bruce was very open about looking for the replacement for Carson Palmer. I don't think that's any earth-shattering news. It's not for this year. It's not even maybe for next year, but that they are looking at the quarterback class. Anybody that around the Cardinals that you heard from, looked at, that makes sense to you, or that you heard the Cardinals have an interest
in? In my opinion, look, my I really think that the Cardinals ought to look hard at Connor Cook. Now, I have to tell you, I said hello to Arians in Indianapolis, but I didn't see any of their people there, so I feel terrible telling you this, but I have no Cardinal inside knowledge at all. But it makes a lot of sense because Steve Keim and Terry McDonough and their staff has done such a good job on down-the-line prospects at other positions, you know, John Brown, Rodney Gunter, you know, you can name 15 of them in the last few drafts, that I think if there's a quarterback they love in the first round, I will not be at all surprised to see them take him. I'd think very seriously because, look, this draft, it seems to me, if Paxton Lynch or Connor Cook is sitting there where they pick way down there, and that might happen, if I were them, I'll tell you, I would be working both of those guys out very hard, and Cardale Jones as well. I'd be looking at all of these sort of, you know, 3 through 7 quarterbacks, and if you have a conviction on one, take them. Look, I can just tell you this. After spending that week last season with Carson Palmer, there isn't a better guy. There might be some guys as good. There isn't a better guy for a young quarterback to follow in the footsteps of and to walk around like a puppy dog behind because he is going to tell you exactly what it takes to be a long-term NFL quarterback. So I think it would be ideal world if, let's say, for the next 2 years, some guy who they have a real conviction in, if there is one, and maybe there isn't one, but that some guy could learn everything from Carson Palmer. And then let's say opening day 2018, then you say, okay, you know, let the best man win in training camp, either whatever Palmer would be 38 or 39 by then, or, you know, the young buck.
Before I let you go, and we're talking with Peter King, mmqb.si.com. The last offseason, it was all Deflategate. This offseason, with the league year starting next week, seems to me very early on being, why is Peyton Manning not retired as of yet? And is it true that the Rams are one team that he may be looking at? And all the speculation around Peyton Manning, what happens with Brock Osweiler? I know you don't have the answers today, Peter, but your gut, as we're sitting here talking, on what happens to Manning, what happens to Osweiler, the Broncos, here in this next week?
I remember vividly before he signed with Denver in 2017, a conversation with Tony Dungy in which he said, I asked him, what do you think the toughest thing for Manning is going to be in making this decision? And he said one word. He said, change. He does not like change. And put yourself in Peyton Manning's shoes. It has been 1 1/4 football season. This guy in 3 weeks turns 40, and he hasn't been himself physically in one since arguably November 2014. Okay, so what makes anybody think? I mean, if you're the Rams, other than as a sideshow, really, why would you sign Peyton Manning? You do it only in the lottery pick of a chance that he could give you 2 years of being really good. He hasn't been really good since November of 2014, and he turns 40. That's why I think you'll see these rumors, you'll hear about these things, but, I mean, it's very hard for me to believe that some team would bring him in thinking that he was going to play for them this year. Mm-hmm. Now, bring him in to say, okay, you know, we'll pay you $10 million this year to come in and to be a mentor, tutor. And, you know, you may play, may turn into a Matt Hasselbeck situation, but we're not sure. If somebody brings him in to be their quarterback this year, I think it would be a terrible mistake. But I don't know what's going to happen, Brad. I really don't. But I just get the strong feeling that Manning is going to take his time. And everybody said, well, why doesn't he just announce it? Because right. He doesn't have to today. He can wait until March 9th. And I'm not saying he will. I'm just saying he can. And I think he figures, why not? Why not take all the time contractually that I'm allowed? Because who knows, maybe a bolt of lightning comes down and says, you need to go play, you need to go sit, whatever. But that's, I don't think there's anything deep and dark and mysterious about it, Brad. I just think he wants to make sure that, you know, he sleeps on it enough and wakes up one morning and says, okay, that's it. And there's no reason to make a decision now for another week.
Let you go off that, Peter. As always, appreciate your insight. Thanks.
All the best, Brad. Thank you.
Stay well. Peter King, the MMQB, MMQB.si.com, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. Welcome back. Tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sismat, Baseball AZ debuts. And we're on not just Fox Sports Arizona, Fox Sports San Diego, Fox Sports Southwest, Fox Sports Midwest, Wisconsin, Ohio, the regions, as we do baseball, as well as our Brad Sismat Football AZ show, which is on tonight with Peter King. I'm going to tell Derek Hall this right off the top of the interview now, the president of the Arizona Diamondbacks, that I actually prepped for this interview by sending questions to about, I'd say, 20 people that I know that are season ticket holders and are very strong Diamondback supporters. Because I have my questions, and I just was like, okay, sometimes media guy gets in the middle of the forest and doesn't see what everybody else is wanting to know. So I'm going in on this interview with that. And the first question is about the Bark Park. I don't know why, but it's the most commonly asked question. Maybe it's because I sent it last night. First of all, thanks for coming on, by the way.
Oh, I'm glad to be here as always. You know that, Brad.
I appreciate it. Will dogs be allowed to roam freely throughout the park? For those fans that didn't know, the Diamondbacks announced yesterday that Sundays, it's like 12 home Sundays, they've got this PetSmart bark park area. So the question was, I threw it out there, most of them wanted to know, will they be allowed to go throughout the stadium?
Well, they're supposed to watch the game from the PetSmart patio, and that is what the picnic area used to be in left field. And you know, even when we had our Bark in the Park days, we had a couple of areas that were dedicated for the dogs. But you know, naturally, people have to get to them, or they have to go to restrooms, so they're going to walk around the park with their dogs. But to actually view the game, they will have seats in that area in the PetSmart patio.
So they can take the dog within the restroom if they have to go.
I think they may have to if they're alone with the dog.
Yes.
The cool thing about this, as you mentioned, there's also going to be the PetSmart Park, which they're building now, and it's going to be a baseball field that's good for them to play in, and also an area where they can go to the restroom or their own restroom. But we're going to have, you know, concessions just for the dogs. They're going to have their own dog-style ice cream with toppings that are, you know, canine-friendly, and then they're also going to have adoptions on those Sundays as well. So
wow.
PetSmart's big into pet adoptions. Are going to have a lot of dogs there to be adopted as well.
That's very cool. Eric is a dog rescuer. That's very, very cool. Okay, next one I got asked quite a bit on. Asked Derek about Goldschmidt. How come they haven't gotten a new deal done with Paul as of yet?
Well, you know, the great thing is he's under contract, you know, so he's under control for, I want to say, you know, 5 years, and there's no pressure to get anything done, and it's certainly not coming from their side. When Paul signed the deal, he let everybody know how happy he was. Now, you know, it's a very team-friendly deal right now, and we'd be the first to admit that. Doesn't mean that we're not going to address it in the future, but it's certainly not something you want to do once spring gets underway or the season gets underway and it becomes any sort of distraction, and that's the last thing he wants. The great thing about Paul is he's very focused. He never complains. And he certainly, you know, is not one that's demanding or asking for any sort of meeting to talk about contract.
Safety. Are you going to expand the netting down the first base and third base lines? It's been talked about throughout Major League Baseball. Where are the Diamondbacks out on this one?
We were really the first to expand ours, Brad. So, you know, behind home plate, we had 75 feet of netting. And a couple years ago, we expanded that to 150, so we doubled it. I caught a lot of grief, too, at first from season ticket holders who were behind the net, and they weren't before that. There were several times during the last couple of seasons where they came up and patted me on the back and said, okay, thanks, because that ball would have hit me or that bat would have hit my kid. So, you know, it's been good for us. If you go to Japan, it's really from foul pole to foul pole, they're so worried about safety. And we, of course, know what the NHL had to go through. There are a few teams this year that are going to go to the far end of the dugout. We end just at the home plate side of the dugout on both sides. We'll see what happens. I know that baseball has recommended that teams go at least to where we had gone, 150 feet behind home plate. So we are, you know, within regulation, but we always want to be at the forefront of safety and security.
So it sounds like you're open to maybe going longer with that.
I am. You know, it scares me to death during games, as you know, and I go running anytime someone gets hit and right. or anytime somebody even gets close to being hit. It scares me. And, you know, you see all these kids that are having such a great time and not paying attention to every pitch, and, you know, nor should they with their attention span, but they're right behind the dugout, you know, and those angles of those line drives, I mean, they just really frighten me. So I'm open to it. I want to see how the other teams handle it this year. I think there, as I said, there are two teams that are going the length of the dugout. I've always thought about ways, you know, of dropping a dugout net or raising it. Just, you know, I still want the interaction between the players and the fans, be able to roll them foul balls and balls in between innings. And I don't want to lose that yet. I want to make sure everybody's safe because we can take those measures.
Diamondback team president Derek Hall. Again, this interview is really not me. It's more fans that are giving me feedback of questions to ask Derek through Twitter and just me sending emails out saying, hey, I'm having the team president on. I've got a couple questions of my own a little bit later on, but they asked about Wi-Fi. Can you speed up the Wi-Fi within stadium?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge for all of our ballparks, and we do have, you know, I want to say over 300 access points. We look each year at trying to increase those and certainly make Wi-Fi more accessible and faster. And, you know, I have the same problems that all our fans do, and everywhere we go, we want to have Wi-Fi access, especially in the ballpark. And it's advantageous to us because we have, you know, our own applications at the ballpark, and people can go on and they can order food from their seats, and then when it's ready, it'll let them know they can go get it. They can look at highlights, videos, stats, bios, etc. So it's important for us that everybody has quicker access to that Wi-Fi as well. And we're constantly looking to improve it, and this offseason we've done so as well. So hopefully it'll already be speedier.
Okay, one question that was asked over and over and over about salaries. Can they add more? I think you and I have had this discussion in years past. There's always the move, the room to add more. It's whether or not Ken says, yeah, go do it, if you say, yeah, this makes sense to us. Is that still the case this year?
Yeah, not much has changed there except for we really went to the max, I would say, for the most part here before the season even starts. We usually give ourselves some wiggle room around the All-Star break. I think we could still probably get creative and increase a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the revenues that we did add to our books from the new TV deal did go into the signing of Zach Greinke and some of the other free agent moves we made, like Tyler Clippard. And, you know, our payroll was supposed to be 100 this year, 100 to 103, and that's where we are right now. But if we really need to make a move, as you've seen in the past, our ownership group is very generous, and they usually allow us to do so.
Derek Hall with us. Okay, on my end, how's Greinke handled the social anxiety to this point and being around media and fans and all that?
Yeah, I think he's been great. You know, he's not the most successful when it comes to fans and media, but that's just, you know, that's his personality, and it works. And we knew that going in. But I think as far as the anxiety goes, he's really got it under control, and he's doing really well. He's got a great personality when you get to know him, and he's really a leader in that clubhouse. I mean, Brad, this guy is... He rubs off so well on the other pitchers. He studies video and wants to be able to help his fellow rotation mates. And I mean, this guy is meticulous, you know, in his preparation with hitting and with bunting. And he's upset with himself if he doesn't lay down the perfect bunt. He's meticulous on the with his bullpens on the mound. And I've had a lot of fun watching him, and I know the guys think he's a terrific teammate. So as long as he does what he's supposed to do between the lines, that's why you signed him. There's certain people that are much more comfortable doing media interviews or interacting with the fans. That's not his forte, and it never has been. So, you know, I don't think you put somebody in an uncomfortable position or, you know, in his case, let him focus on pitching. That's why he's here, and that's why we needed him.
Well, it's no different than when Randy was here, except it wasn't termed social anxiety. I had no problems being around Randy when he'd bark and yell and didn't go cower off in the corner and say, oh, Randy's upset. Well, that's why he's so great. Greatness has that certain thing about them. I don't see those two being related in terms of Randy just didn't care much for dealing with people when it was his day to pitch. So what? Zach's not, from my early dealings with him, he's been fine. It seems to me you've just got to monitor the situations you put him in and for how
totally
long
agree.
You put him in those situations.
Yeah, that's right. And just like Randy when he was playing, you know, there were times when he was really good with the media. And when if he wasn't pitching that day, he was fine. And now, you know, he's terrific. I mean, he'll do any interview we ask him to do. He's a lot of fun to be around. Same's going to happen for Zach, you know. But for right now, he really wants to just be the best that he can be when he's on the mound. And his preparation is more important than any extracurricular activity that we may have him take part in.
Okay, on my view, here's what I'm hearing around town. Okay, and if I'm off base, just cut me off here.
Sure.
ballpark is too big, needs to be drilled down. By 2020, the Diamondbacks will be where the Scottsdale drive-in is or across the freeway on the 101, 202 from where the Cubs facility is. $300 million to make it over, take the lid off, put it back on. Not feasible. What's going on? Is there any thought on your situation with the ballpark?
No, you know, there really isn't. We've each year we invest in Chase Field to make sure that it looks as good as it did from day one, and I still think, you know, it looks as good, if not better, today. And on opening day, it'll look better than it ever has. You know, we invest a lot of money in that facility, and I think the reason why there's so much speculation or talk is we have said in the past, everybody has, that the ballpark's too big. When you look at new ballparks today, they're anywhere from 38 to, you know, maybe 43,000 seats, and here we are at 50,000 in this market. Now, on opening day or playoffs or, you know, bobblehead giveaways, it's great. You know, yeah, you're glad you have that much capacity. But I don't think that there's a solution to that. I'm not one that likes tarping. The other thing that people are focused on is just how long our lease is. And we still have another 12 years on our lease, but you look at what the Braves did. I mean, they were only 2 years older than us at Turner Field, and this is going to be their last year there. So they've built a new ballpark, and they had to ask the question, do we put another $300 million in Turner Field, or does it make more sense to take that money and create new jobs and drive a new economy with a new ballpark? And that's what they've done. So I think people are looking around saying, okay, who's next? Who's coming up next? And they realize we're the fourth oldest ballpark in the league now. You know, hard to believe, but you look at the other teams, and if you're the Dodgers, you're not going to move. You're going to invest in an iconic, you know, location like that. Cubs aren't going to move, and that's just, you know, makes sense for them to invest $400 or $500 million. That's something we're going to have to ask ourselves at one point.
And I look at it and say the ballpark still looks great, but it does have a bit of, wow, this is almost 20 years in the making. And you've done the truck races, you've done all the stuff in the off season that takes a wear and tear on the guts of any facility. It's like what Robert's going through over across the street from you. That's the same sort of thing. And when I hear that, well, we should be fine with these facilities, paying for them is going to be the issue. And that's just how it is nowadays. But
you're exactly right. So we know that it's going to take probably $200 million just to be able to operate this building over the next 12 years, 11 or 12 years of our lease. So on top of that $200 million, we always want to be as, you know, fan-friendly, state-of-the-art. We want the best facility for our fans. So that's the decision we have to make, because we're always going to have them in mind. You know, should it be a new ballpark? Should it be Chase Field? I like iconic ballparks, and I like nostalgia. So, you know, I'm torn on that one. We don't have to make that decision for a while, but I think that's why the speculation has arisen at this point.
Okay, before I let you go, on the field, your biggest concern as team president is, and if you say health, I'm just going to bang my head against the wall. You know, if other than Greinke's shoulder blowing up, what is your biggest concern in terms of position play?
I just want to make sure that we're able to repeat. You know, that's the toughest thing to do. And when we address the pitching, what I think were, you know, holes after in the offseason after last season, you know, we looked back and said, hey, we're a top three offense, we're a top two, you know, defense. Well, what keeps me up is making sure that we can repeat that, you know, and Goldie in his prime and AJ in his prime and you know, we have Corbin coming back, mm-hmm. and I just want to make sure these guys can perform at the level that they have over the last couple of seasons. And I think there's a lot of hope for this team. The other thing that concerns me, you know, Brad, and we've talked about it before, is how good we look on paper. That doesn't mean anything at this point, you know, and we haven't won a single game. We haven't achieved a single goal at this point. I think our division is going to be so tough. It frightens me that we're all going to beat each other up, and you're not going to get two teams in the playoffs out of our division because we are going to be so competitive, and it may take 84 or 86 wins to even make the playoffs in our division because there's so many good teams.
No, that's a good point. It's a good point. Appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for answering fans' questions,
Brad's questions. Yeah, thanks for having me. Great job as always.
Stay well. There's Derek Hall with us, team president, Arizona Diamondbacks. Appreciate his time. Sports360AZ.com. Hey, tonight we're on Fox Sports Arizona, the debut of Brad Susmat Baseball AZ as we take you around the Cactus League. It's been picked up by several of the Fox regionals, not just Fox Sports Arizona. Jared Nielsen doing a terrific job and putting it all together. It's his fault if you don't like it, not mine. We're back with more after this timeout. So a really interesting move that just happened in the NFL while we were talking to Derek Hall, and that is Mario Williams was released today by the Houston Texans. Of course, it happens after Peter's on, but Mario Williams was a former number one overall pick and has been in Houston and has not done a whole heck of a lot. I don't know. It's going to be a name. It's going to be a talk topic. It's going to be things that people are going to kick around here over the next few days as we get towards next week with free agency starting. But an interesting name nonetheless. So that came down. I saw when I was going through my morning readings, and look, when I do this show, it's not just see what's on the front page of, you know, some website or some paper. I look at things, and if they're of interest to me, then I think they're going to be of interest to you because I'm going to be more interested in talking about them. That's how I get this together every day for the last 20 some odd years. Forbes released their annual list of billionaires that are sports owners. Okay. Forbes annual list of billionaires. So I started looking through this list and I found it interesting, or maybe not, that there is not one owner among the Phoenix franchises that is on the Forbes annual list of billionaires. Now there's 20 NBA owners, there's 19 NFL owners, 10 NHL owners, and 8 Major League Baseball owners that are billionaires. Not one of them has a franchise here in Arizona. We didn't make the list. Steve Ballmer is the 26th richest person in the world overall, and he's on this list at $23.5 billion. He's in pretty good shape. I think he can afford to sign free agents. And by the way, I don't know if you saw where LeBron James bought some mansion in L.A. this week. And there's already conversation about how LeBron is not happy in Cleveland and all the nonsense around Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving and David Griffin and so on and so forth. Just throwing that out there. The Jaguars owner, Saeed Khan, is worth $5.9 billion, and he is the leader among NFL owners. The Bidwells are not on the list. Doesn't mean they don't have a couple of nickels to rub together. They're just not on this list. The baseball leader is the Nationals owner, Ted Lerner, who's worth $5.5 billion. I'm sure Matt Williams, in his short stay in Washington, found out all too well or too hard or too quickly that the owner of the Nationals expected quick results and did not get them. Thus, Matty is back here. I mean, that's a swipe as Matt. It's just when you have gobs of money, you expect to see instant results. And for a team like the Nationals that had Strasburg or has Strasburg and Bryce Harper, and you go down the list of all the very good players they've had, they still haven't done anything. So you can have all the money in the world you want. If you're the Jaguars owner, you're in Jacksonville, okay? The end game may be getting you to London, but you're in stinking Jacksonville. You have no shot when you're in Jacksonville, in my humble opinion. And so it doesn't equate to me that good ownership involves being full of money, just like in life. I know some people that are so jacked up and they've got gobs and gobs and gobs of money, but they're absolutely miserable human beings and they're not chasing it in that regard. I mean, they can tell me how much money they have and I'm thoroughly not impressed. That does not do it for me. When sports owners are very successful in other forms of life, From where I'm sitting to you right now, I have to look at them with a crooked eye through the years because they've never dealt with athletes. They've never dealt with agents. They've never dealt with all the outside distractions. You could be the general manager of X team, and this morning, one of your star players could have get popped for something off the field that you had no idea was coming. And you can't throw money at that to solve the problem. If you're the owner of the Cleveland Browns and you had all this money hanging around, you still don't know how to run a football franchise to save your life. So just because you make money doesn't mean you have a clue about running a sports team. It doesn't. But I did find it interesting. There was nobody here in Phoenix that made the Forbes billionaire list. Last night were the state high school basketball finals. And I usually go to those, but we're really busy doing extra shows now with two TV shows. You were there last night, though, right? You and Jared and
yes.
Kyler?
Yes, Kyler went to the afternoon games, and then Jared and I tag-teamed the night games.
And the state finals on the boys' side, this was a year where we had great hope back in November. Actually, about a year ago, we had great hope that this was going to be an unbelievable year in high school boys basketball. Unfortunately, most of the top players left the state, got out of here, or they had really bad advice from somebody in their inner circle, and they never saw a moment on the court. And they are 6'9", 6'10", and they could have been recruited by anybody, but they received horrible, horrible, just just really bad advice from people across the globe, I think, on this whole thing with Marvin Bagley. So that happened. So were the games any good last night? Did you see any?
One game was very good. The Division I game, Sunny Slope, broke out early and then eventually faltered to Mesa.
Yeah.
The Division II game, not close, as expected. Shadow Mountain started fast and just completely rolled Agua Fria.
Shadow Mountain has some college kids, right?
A few.
Yeah. Bibby's on that team, Lil Bibby.
Yep. Lil Bibby missed a breakaway dunk, but other than that, had a great game.
Eddie House's kid's on that team?
Yep. He's a freshman. He will definitely be a Division I player by the time he's done.
But was this a really loaded Shadow team? Because they usually have like 3-4 guys every year they're moving.
Jared made a great point. He thinks that Shadow was the best team in the state this year.
And I was going to say, the Jackrabbits haven't done much since Jahi was there.
Right.
Actually, saw Jahi was tweeting about this stuff, so I guess he's back in town. Well, there was a game last night. Did you hear about this Rhode Island game?
I didn't hear a lot about it. I just saw a little snippet of it.
So we have the video of this. There's 4 seconds left in the Rhode Island State Championship game. Burleville High School, okay, they are the team that's going to win this. They intercept the inbounds pass, and look what the kid does. He throws it in the air because they're going to win, right? Well, no. Comes down. Timeout is called. They're all ecstatic. They're charging the court. The team there thinks they've won the state title. The team in white's the one that called the timeout. So they set the clock. They called the timeout. Chihario had one last shot. Do we have the last shot? Keep it going. If we have the last shot, just put it back up there. I can talk around this. I can do this. We still have it? Yeah, go ahead. So they're going for it. Last shot. Layup. They win. That's the craziest thing. Those poor kids are never, ever, when you intercept the ball and you're a kid in high school, you just think you've won the state title. So, of course, you're going to throw it in the air. And then you're the other team and you play till the final whistle, 1 second left, and they get an open layup. So, I love that story. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. There's lots of content up on our website. We're 24/7, 365. Can you believe it? We're 4.5 years into this deal now. 4.5. Now that March 1 is here. Unbelievable. High school, college, pro college, high school. We have two TV shows tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmat Football AZ, Brad Sussmat Baseball AZ. And the Baseball AZ show is also being seen around the country on many Fox Sports regions. We appreciate their support. Thanks for being with us.